See, Regina, I chuckled when you said you suspected that would go. Good morning, everyone. Can everyone hear me okay? Do I need to turn my mic up for anything? Okay. Good morning. Welcome to the weekly gathering for Awakening Together. We will begin with a short song so that we can greet one another. We are an online church, and so we don't have the opportunity, except a couple times a year, we don't have the opportunity to be in physical contact with one another, so we join in this virtual way, and on Sunday mornings, we like to reach over the virtual pew and exchange greetings with one another. So I will, I'll quit rambling here and let go of the mic so Lynn can play us a song so we can greet one another.
We are awakening to the calling of the mystic awakening. Pouring of the heart, everybody here, melting into presence, overflowing effervescence. Rising in love, we are awakening. Dawn is breaking, waves are coming in, everybody standing in wonder, feeling the rain and the thunder.
Thank you, Lynn. I just filled with love for Lynn Johnson, who has been with us throughout our existence as Awakening Together. And I appreciate, Lynn, your continued service. Thank you for acting as our music director. Yeah, it's really, really, really sweet to see you. Okay. And I want to thank Regina for her post. She said, good morning, everyone, from Pueblo. Light rain today, 2 days after a big windstorm that damaged many roofs and fences in the area. A few dogs were freed by the downed fences. They seemed to love the bit of freedom that came with the wind. And I really, it's a really sweet comment Regina made here in the room. And I really appreciate it because it's so on point with today's message, because Regina's not going, and it blew my fence over, or it was so windy it blew all this dust in through my doors, which, you know, she did make a post on Facebook about the dust that it blew through her door. But for her to, I just really appreciate that she saw this from the dog's perspective, and that this wind gave these dogs the freedom. I just, something about that was really, really sweet, and I appreciate you sharing that, Regina. Okay, so at this point in our service, we will look at Awakening Together's statement of purpose and one of our core values. That's our tradition here. Our statement of purpose: we are an assembly of equals joined in common purpose, awakening to one true self within an appearance of many faiths, many truths, and many symbols. We seek to discern one truth and to rest in its embrace. And the core value that is most closely aligned with the message this morning is core value number 3. We accept one true self, which is one presence or being, non-dual, beginning or end, and absolutely changeless. We live this value by practicing letting go of the belief in the individual self as who we are. Yeah. All right. And let's look at our announcements. Okay. As you all know, Awakening Together's fall retreat is coming up in October. It is 3 retreats, again this year, 3 retreats. Gina Lake, Regina Dawn Akers, and then Bob Ferguson and Tess Hughes together. Gina Lake's retreat is October the 20th through the 23rd, and it is called In the World But Not of It, Awakening Christ Consciousness. Gina receives her clarity from a very close relationship with the inner teacher, which she perceives as Jesus. The clarity that guides her is extraordinary in how it points out the ego's tricks. It does this with a gentleness and a spotlight. When she speaks, it is very easy to see the ego's tricks. If we listen to her often, it is extremely helpful, because the ego can't get away with as much as it does when we are less aware of its tricks. Gina teaches here in the Awakening Together Sanctuary each Wednesday at 1:30 p.m. Eastern Time, 10:30 a.m. Pacific. Her teachings are also recorded and archived at awakening-together.org under Audios Sanctuary Highlights. Gina also has a new book out called All Grace, New Teachings from Jesus on the Truth About Life. In fact, if you go to smile.amazon.com or amazon.com and search for Gina Lake, you'll find she has several good ego-busting books from Jesus. We're very excited that she will be one of the retreat leaders at our fall retreat. Gina doesn't do many retreats, so this is an exceptional opportunity for us. We're also noticing registrations from people who are outside of Awakening Together but excited to attend a retreat with Gina Lake. You can get full details about Gina's retreat and all of the Awakening Together fall retreats by looking under the events menu at awakening-together.org. Okay, and announcement number 2, Awakening Together's quarterly member meeting is next Sunday night, April the 2nd at 8 p.m. Eastern Time, 5 p.m. Pacific. Regina will share our 2016 annual financial report with you. She'll also give us updates on the Retreat House campaign and talk about our 2018 fall retreat, which will be an Israel pilgrimage. Plan to be here next Sunday at 8 p.m. Eastern Time for this quarterly member meeting. Announcement number 3, our movie discussion group is tonight at 8 p.m. Eastern Time, 5 p.m. Pacific. This month's movie is Adam's Apples. If you haven't watched it, there's still time. You can still watch it this afternoon and then join us tonight. It's a great movie. It's a dark comedy. The movie is about a priest in a rural church who sees the world through rose-colored glasses and whose rectory is a halfway house for recently paroled convicts. One such convict, Adam, is a large, tough neo-Nazi. First baffled by the priest's thick-headed optimism, then angry, and he vows to break the priest's faith. It's a fabulous movie. I think you'll find a lot of things in here that give you pause for contemplation. We say to pray before the movie to see what Holy Spirit would have you see during the movie. You might want to take notes if your movie watching is conducive to that, and then journal afterwards. So just really contemplate the movie from a perspective of how does this movie impact me, and what does it tell me about myself, my relation to the world, just to get some insights into what it is that you believe about yourself in the world. And it's just a real sweet way to watch the movies. And what we do is we watch the movies individually and then come back and discuss that once a month. And so that's tonight at 8 p.m., 5 p.m. Pacific, not specific, Pacific. So please join us. That's always a lot of fun. The discussion is really interesting. It's interesting to see what different folks gleaned from the movie. The movie group will be followed by the last edition of Maria Felipe's miniseries, Live Your Happy. Also, since this is the last of that series, it's a good time to donate if you found her miniseries inspirational. Our recommended donation is $2 to $10 per week, which would be a total of $8 to $40 for this 4-week mini-series. Remember, this is the only way these folks get paid for providing us this service. So really, if you've listened in at all, you'll want to make a donation. And this is the last opportunity to donate to this particular mini-series. So please take that opportunity to donate tonight. Let's see, Maria also has offered a signed copy of her to the one who makes the largest donation. If you'd like to donate, go to awakening-together.org, click donate, and then click support the current miniseries. 100% of those donations made by March the 26th will be given to Maria. I'm sorry, I'm just looking at something on Okay, let's see. Our next mini-series will start this week after the member meeting. Our April mini-series guest is Carol Howe. Her topic will be See How Life Works, Practicing the Path of Peace of Mind. Okay. And those are our announcements. And now we're going to switch gears a little bit, slow down a little bit, and settle in for the for today's message. So I'm going to let go of the mic and let sweet Lynn Johnson play us a sweet song to settle in. So here's the mic. Thanks, Lynn.
Go ahead, Lynn. The mic is yours.
The mic is yours.
All of these lines across my face tell you the story of who I am. So many stories of where I've been, and now I got to where I am. Oh, but these stories don't mean anything. You've got no one to tell them to. We do. I was made for you. I climbed across the mountain top, across the ocean blue, across over lands, and I broke all the rules. And baby,
Father, Mother, God, we look to you for the truth. We know that when we look to you for the truth, that that truth comes through. I know that to the extent that I can step aside, that's the extent to which I'll hear the truth. That's the extent to which I'll let the truth come through me. I pray for your guidance and your blessing. Amen.
Amen.
Okay. Now we'll have our inspirational reading by Reverend Sherry Daves. Sherry, please take the mic.
Good morning. morning. Just checking the sound. Okay, thank you. So as Regina had mentioned earlier, this reading is from Paul Hederman, and it's entitled Enslaved to Thoughts. You have lots of thoughts about you all day. The gravitational pull that keeps them close is from the planet self. The mind is obsessed with the idea of being a self, and it doesn't recognize that's the dilemma. Your attention orbits around the planet self because the self provides the gravitational pull to all the thoughts, making them about you. If you realized they weren't about the real you, they could simply come and go. Your attention would be freed up from the slavery of selfing and would attend to the conscious contact, a recognition of life in and of itself. You'd be traveling lighter, not by any procedures or practice, but simply by recognition of what is so. The reason I'm hooked on the narrative in my head is because I think it's about me. By freeing up some of the attention from that selfing, there's awareness of the conscious contact. Then the enslavement is over. Once you recognize you're not the self, you'll lose interest in all its activities. Simply by entertaining that the selfing is not you. You'll lose interest in obsessing with the thoughts, making up stories about the feelings you're having or not having. The attention that's glued to the screen of selfing will be released. It will be available to the conscious contact, each moment's experience. Most of your attention goes to what's not happening, the past and future, instead of what is happening. When that devotional practice of selfing is dismissed, you can attend to what is happening, the conscious state of what you are, conscious contact. You'll be aware of existing, the I am. When that I am is in place, you can have an immunity to all the I am nots. Simple as that. Just an entertaining of the I am gives you recognition of what is. When you're identified as a self, you are living as though you were solid, a thing, a noun, which gives you the inability to recognize the active experience called living. You accept an interpretation by the head to replace the livingness of it. You think living is about something that has happened or something that may happen. You think living is about having expectations, withdrawing yourself from this moment in favor of a mystical moment that will be better than this moment, because it seems like there's nothing happening in this moment. From what point of view? Point of view of the self as a noun. But life is a verb, appearing every moment new, always happening. Otherwise, it would be called wasing or will-being. Selfing wonders with this. You could was yourself into a great mythical past or will be yourself into a hopeful or fearful mythical future. But all of nothing's happening. And selfing, life is happening to you. Self has become such a strong reference point that everything that's happening is now happening to you. That's a huge interpretation. And when you interpret life, you miss it. It's impossible not to. You cannot corral a verb. You just go along with it. You don't have to change the fact that you're living totally in interpretation. Just attend to the awareness. And that awareness will stop your attention from giving up to selfing. That whole production will move to the background. And the background, which is the awareness, will move to the foreground. The emphasis will shift. And you'll travel lighter. Just entertain the idea that you're not the self you think you are. Self-centeredness binds you to things, and meaning is given to those things so that they can affect you. Circumstances don't bind you. The self-centeredness binds you to the circumstances. A thought as just a thought, but it changes dramatically when it becomes my thought. The interpretation of the thought as being mine is slapped on it. Now the thought, whose nature it is to come and go, doesn't go by so quickly anymore. A thought comes into awareness. You hear the thought, but how you hear it is, I'm the thinker of it. The thought becomes observed as being mine, the act of identification, my thought. The my connects it with the file system called Paul. Paul has a lot of files about life related to Paul. As soon as the thought becomes identified as my thought, the file system gets opened, pulling up old ideas and downloading them into the thought. The binding agent isn't the thought. You're claiming it is the binding agent. Now you're bound to that thought instead of going on its way. It's orbiting around you. The planet of you provides the gravitational pull that keeps the thoughts circling. If you lose interest in the idea that you are the planet, then you'll lose interest in the thoughts about you as planet, releasing the thoughts from their gravitation. And I'll release the mic.
Hey, Gary, thank you for your reading. I think that last little part got cut off, releasing the thoughts from their gravitational orbit so that they can come and go and they are freed. Thank you so much for reading that, Sherry. Yeah, okay. So this idea of selfing will be familiar to those of you who heard Paul talk in our SAT song last Sunday. I had not heard of Paul Hederman until Regina began adding his talks to the Awakening Together playlist that we listen to on the hours when we don't have live programming. She suggested that I listen to him, and we consider him for SAT song, and I am very glad that she did that, because when you're ready for, like they say, when the student's ready, the teacher will appear, but when you're ready for a particular thing, then that teaching is there for you. And so, I feel like Paul sets this up in a way that just resonates with me. But it's certainly consistent with what we've been hearing in our consistent gentle healing class and in the lessons that we've been given in that class, the Course in Miracles lessons that we've been given in that class. So let's look at this idea again of selfing. So what is selfing? Selfing is being obsessed with thoughts, making up stories about those thoughts, stories about the feelings you're having or not having. As Sherry just read to us, this idea that everything that happens is about me, right? It's a self-centered idea, and it's, Romans, we looked at Romans chapter 9, chapter through, I don't know what it was, Regina can tell you, through chapter 16, I think, in our consistent gentle healing class, week before last, I think it was. And Romans said, I ask you to give your willingness to accept that the world is not real. Give your willingness to see all that you experience as thought, that the world is not real. I'm summarizing Romans, by the way. I took some notes on it. But it said, don't try to understand it. Do not try to justify that which confuses you. That is to want it, the world, to fit within your illusion of reality. So what we try to do is we try to reconcile the world with our truth. what we want is we want the world and all that we believe to be true, and we want the truth to be true. And the facts, that's where the confusion lies, because we can't have it both ways, because this world was made to show us something other than the truth. So what Romans asked us to do is to be willing to not believe our thoughts and our experience. And what selfing is all about is about trying to make the world have meaning. It's about trying to make the world be meaningful in relation to the self. How do I fit in this? You know, how do I take control of this? How do I not feel that I'm at the mercy of the world? How do I not feel that I'm going to just be blown about? You know, I'm trying to ground myself. I'm trying to make sense of this world. And what Romans has asked us to do is to not try to make sense of that. In fact, just a second. Romans says that to do that is to harden the world, is to, you know, it makes, I'm sorry, I'm having a hard time because I can't find that section. Maybe Regina remembers it. She can tell me what it says. Yeah, it's, to try to make sense of it is to solidify, yes, harden the illusion through belief. That's it. Thank you, Regina, for your help. Yeah. So, and that's what's going on with this selfing. So we take these attempts to make sense of our world, as Paul said here. You know, we've got this little file cabinet. We've got everything that happened in the past, and things that we anticipate are going to happen in the future. And we make this noun, this hero of the dream, the A Course in Miracles will call it, to navigate its way through this illusion that is the world. And so by doing that, we solidify all of it. We solidify the world. We solidify the self. And then we attempt to navigate this, I don't know, Paul sometimes calls it an action figure. We attempt to navigate this action figure through this world that we've made. And what we're being asked to do instead of that is to forgive the world. And as Regina told us recently, forgiveness is letting go of the untrue and placing attention with the true instead. So instead of trying to categorize place in the world, what we need to be doing is recognizing that the world has served its purpose. Remember, the purpose of the world was to show us what it would be like if things were different than they really are. We have oneness. The world is designed to show us unoneness, right? Separation, division, attack, competition, struggle, strife. That's what the world is designed to show us, and it's done a pretty daggone good job of that. But to try to make sense of that is to continue to believe that that's the truth. Forgiveness is letting go of our belief in the world. Forgiveness is letting go of our belief in the untrue and placing our attention with the truth instead. So, what's the alternative to selfing? Well, the alternative to selfing is to see that we no longer have to attempt to place ourselves, is to see that this is a part of the code. And Regina's been talking to us about the code. For all of you who are present for her consistent gentle healing classes, you know that our thoughts feed into the overall thoughts that create this experience that we call the world. So the alternative is to just recognize our experience and the thoughts that we see are just a result of our past desire, are just a result of our past thoughts, and to no longer accept them as our own. So this is the difference between selfing, being obsessed about ourselves, being obsessed with our thoughts, claiming those thoughts as our own, and just resting in awareness. Okay, so Paul makes a point in this article. He says, in selfing, life is happening to you. Self has become such a strong reference point that everything is happening, everything that is happening now is happening to you. And my sister Connie yesterday said, I had a good example, instead of going, oh, it's raining, you go, oh, it's raining on me, or it's raining on my day, or it's raining and therefore I can't play golf. You don't just experience the rain is raining. And everything is like this. It's how does this affect me? So we take all of these discrete events and we build them into a story about me and how this affects me. And gosh, guys, I seem a little scattered this morning, and I apologize for that. But I'm thinking about how, you know, even like these may have been helpful in the past, but they encourage us to think about, and I've never really closely, but the whole Enneagram thing. Oh, I'm empathic, or I don't even know what the other ones are. But, you know, but we take these categories and we try and fit ourselves into these categories. And then we look out from this sense of self that we've created and we go, well, that's no surprise. Of course I would do that because I'm this category. I'm sensitive. So, of course, what he said would hurt my feelings. And we use this to justify our actions and to predict our actions in the future. We have this whole story about who we are and how we relate to the world. And then that's the noun that we see from. And seeing from that noun, seeing from that belief about this bundle of thoughts about who we are, constrains us to that action in the future. Let me give you an example. My son recently got a new job, and he had been a stay-at-home dad. So I'm now picking up my grandbabies from school. So this was the first week or so of me picking up the grandbabies from school. And I call them grandbabies, but my grandchild Aria is 12 years old, and so she stayed late one day from school. So I went to pick her up an hour later. In Mama, and of course, it was the perfect setup. I left my telephone at home, and I didn't go back for it because I didn't want to be late. So in my mind, we're going to meet at the exact same place that we had met at, you know, the two times prior. So I get there, no Aria, she's not there. I get there exactly on time, no Aria, she's not there. So I'm like, well, daggone, of course that would happen today. I leave my phone at home. So I borrow, there's some kids there. I borrow their cell phone. I call Tom. He looks at my phone to see if Aria's, you know, attempted to call. She won't answer his calls. She has written a text message saying, do you know where to pick me up? And of course, you know, I'm thinking, well, of course I know where to pick you up. Same place I picked you up, you know, the 2 days prior. So I'm angry. The point is I'm angry. I'm angry, you know, I'm thinking, gosh, that's how kids are, they don't, you know, why don't they think ahead, of course, she should know this, blah, 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 so I've got all these stories about how the world works, how kids are, what she should do, what she should have known. I'm using all these stories to get upset, right? So finally, she comes outside. She sees me. Her explanation for why she didn't come only makes me angrier, right? Because the teacher told her that I probably wasn't there. Because she looked outside. She didn't see my vehicle, although she should know my vehicle. All these reasons, you know, so that it seems to escalate. So I'm angry. You know, here it is an hour and a half later. I'm angry. I got all these reasons to be angry. I'm doing them a favor, blah, blah, blah. I'm busy, blah, blah, blah. All this backing. And then I remember that I don't have to claim this anger. I am definitely angry. There's no question that I'm angry. But I remember that I don't have to stay with that anger. That anger is just an option. That I don't have to claim, oh, I'm angry, and therefore that tells me something about who I am. Of course I'm angry because blah, 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 all my reasons, right? I don't have to be angry. I see that option. I see that I don't have to claim that anger as my own. And so I don't. And I can nearly see as if drawn on a blackboard my option to take path one or path two. Path one is to continue to be angry because I got a lot of good reasons to be angry. And I don't know how to back out of that. Path two is just to not claim the anger anymore. Is to see the anger as angering. You see, it doesn't have anything to do with the circumstances that happened a minute ago. It doesn't have anything to do with who it is that I think I am. It doesn't have anything to do with how she should act, how the world should be. It's an option that I can choose to claim or not. And once I choose not to claim it, I can give that option up. It's just done. It's over. It's gone. It's something I don't have to feed more anger back into the overall collective consciousness. Yeah. Yes, I have to stay with the anger option any longer. Okay, so again, what's the option? What's the... what are our options here? Our options are to see everything as being about me, telling me something about me and my place in the world. And that's what we do all of the time. How is this going to affect me? How is this going to affect me? What are they thinking of me? Am I doing a good job with this sermon? Do they like this sermon? You know, I can be there. Oh my God, I got confused. I'm all over the board. I can choose not to let that be an impediment. I can choose to move on with the message. I can choose to go back to the beginning. I'm unlimited in my choices. Absolutely unlimited to be in this moment. Now, not in that moment, you know, 60 seconds ago when I didn't know what I was going to say next, when I was thinking, oh my God, they must think I'm an idiot. I can be in this moment. I can open myself up to allow inspiration to come through me. I can open myself up to see the inspiration, to be the inspiration, to feel that. So, the alternative to selfing is what Paul calls being in conscious contact, a recognition of life in and of itself. He says most of your attention goes to what's not happening, the past and the future. How does this affect me? What is the Jacqueline that I know? What would she do? What will people think of me in the future? Most of your attention goes to what's not happening, the past and the future, instead of what is happening. When that devotional practice of selfing is dismissed, you can attend to what is happening. This is what we've heard Regina call awareness, watching awareness. This is what we've heard Eckhart Tolle talk about being in the now. I heard someone teaching Rupert Spira the other day talk about being in the now. He's like, the now is not a moment in time. It's only the self that believes in time, the personal self that believes in time. Being in the now is experiencing what is happening as it's happening without the filter of Jacqueline, without the filter of the personal self telling you, oh, this is what this means. It's experiencing it as it happens. It's allowing it to move through you, as Michael Singer would say. It's not attempting to grasp onto that meaning, onto that moment and give it meaning and fit it into your little file box of Jacqueline's life, or Regina's life, or Kathy's life, or Connie's life, or Sherry's life. Paul says, when you're identified as a self, you're living as though you were a solid thing, a noun, which gives you the inability to recognize the active experience called living. What we do instead is, he says here, is you accept an interpretation. An interpretation that your head makes instead of living life. He says, attend to the awareness, and that awareness will stop your attention from giving up to selfing. And that's the really cool thing about this is, and that's why I have been so moved by this, is if you're looking for this, you get to see the choice point. You get to see the point where you begin to assign meaning and forget to pay attention to what's happening. Where you get caught up in your head and you quit living. You get to see that choice point. You go, oh my God, I'm doing it. I'm thinking about myself. I'm thinking about how this affects me. I'm thinking about what this means. Many times, and I did this recently. I went to a party recently. I was having a great time. Girls were singing. We were having a ball. And then I caught myself thinking about myself. All of a sudden, I mean, it just comes up seemingly unbidden. Oh, they must think I'm a good singer. They must think I'm funny. They must like me. And you know what? So one moment, I'm having a ball, right? Singing and having fun with these girls. And the next moment, I'm in my mind. And it's not a fun place to be. It's not. It's second guessing. It's like, oh, you know, it's my shirt. Third strip, and you know, is my hair fixed or what? I mean, whatever it is. And suddenly, I'm no longer sitting here having a great time with everybody. I'm in this artificial world thinking about myself, and I could catch myself doing it. And I go, oh gosh, I'm selfing. And so I quit, right? And then I'm having a great time, and we're singing, and then I catch myself selfing again. And it's just, it was really fun to see. It was quite the experiment, with non-selfing to just be in that moment. And I can tell you that it's a lot more fun just to be in that moment. Yeah, I'm with Lynn. I don't like me very much. The me, quote unquote me. I don't like running into quote unquote her at parties. Right. It's a lot more fun to be at the party when you're not a me. When there's not a self that you have to maintain. When you don't have to figure out what people think of you. Yeah, as Paul says here, he says, self-centeredness binds you to things, and a meaning is given to those things so that they can affect you. I mean, you know, it can be as simple as, gee, everybody's having fun and singing. I wish I could sing. Then I could have a good time. You see how you've bound yourself to that person who can't sing? We accept these self-limitations. We think that we place them on ourselves and then we're trapped by them. the reason it's helpful, one of the reasons it's helpful to see that this is an activity is because the truth is that there is no personal self. Because there is no personal self, because it's just this collection of thoughts, it requires constant reinforcement to exist at all. And we use our thoughts, we use thoughts, the thoughts, feelings, actions, memories, all of these all the time. We're all the time sculpting this personal self that we think we are, all the time. So if we can give up this, and that's what we call selfing, if we can get this activity of sculpting and, oh, here's something I'll add on, here's something I want to get rid of, if we can give that up, then that collection, that clump of clay that we think we are, that can dissipate. And then we can be in the true awareness that we are. Once we quit collecting these attributes of the self, another modality comes in. That modality is the true self. That's who we really are. That's awareness. That's pure awareness. Then we get to rest in pure awareness. Which my little exam at the party shows. Now, that may not sound serious enough to you. Oh, she had a good time at a party, but I'm telling you it is. It's a very serious matter. I can be obsessing about myself, or I can be in that moment, fully participating in that moment. Which would you rather do? Now, this gets, as Paul pointed out in his satsang, this gets a little more interesting. Because we bring this self into our spiritual speaking. And we try to improve the self. And we try to find enlightenment for the self. We try to find freedom from the self by using the self. As Paul said, he said, we are all seeking our own answer, but we want to be there when it happens. Yeah. Because the truth is, or so I've been told, the truth is, enlightenment is not perceiving through the lens of the ego. That's a little sticker I put here one day when I heard Adi Shanti say it. Enlightenment is not perceiving through the lens of ego. What's the ego? The self. It's this collection of ideas that we've made up. As Paul says, there is being, conscious contact, present action in progress, a verb. Being is an uninterrupted verb. Trying to make a noun of that verb. We make that noun by collecting these things about ourselves. These beliefs about ourselves. About our relation to the world. So the alternative is to change where we're looking from. When we're tempted to look from the self, remember that there's no self to remember. Remember that there's no self to look from. Well, how do I do that? Well, Paul says that when you reach for that ability, you bring yourself out of that, he called it a yoga posture, but you bring yourself out of the stagnation of the self. You give yourself another possibility. How would it be if I were in this moment and I weren't thinking about myself? How would it be to just be in this moment? I weren't trying to categorize this as good or bad. You know, that's what the Course is talking to us about when it's talking about judgment, right? You're not trying to categorize. You're not trying to find meaning. You're not trying to place this in some file system for the life and times of Jacqueline or Regina or Sherry. You're just experiencing the moment. So that's the practice of forgiveness. Remember, forgiveness is letting go of the untrue, the belief in the self, right? Forgiveness is letting go of the untrue and placing attention with the true instead. What's true? Beingness. Experiencing of the now moment. Paul calls it conscious contact. Each moment's experience. Again, he says most of your attention goes to what's not happening, the past and the future, instead of what is happening. So let's just place our focus there. Notice also he says when that devotional practice of selfing, what devotion we have to the practice of selfing. Watch yourself do it. Look for it. See where you're selfing. Oh, that would never work for me. I don't look good in red. I don't wear hats. I mean, simple stuff, right? You know, I know that there have been several times in my life when I've gone, oh, I wish I were the type of person who, you know, fill in the blank, sent thank you notes, wrote love songs. Play the guitar, whatever it was. I wish I were that, this or that. Well, do this or that. You don't have to wish it. Just do it. Write a thank you note. Be that person. Don't be constrained by this collection of ideas you have. Oh, I could never do that. Why constrain yourself to that? Then Paul goes on to say, you think living is about having expectations, withholding yourself from this moment in favor of a mystical moment that will be better than this moment. And that's what we do. That's why we're never in the now. You know, Paul talks about when he was a kid, he never thought about trying to be in the now moment. He was just a kid. He just played like the rest of us. We just play. We're not thinking about ourselves. We're just having a good time. We're just having the experience that we're having. We're not trying to relate it to what happened yesterday or, you know, like he says, will I be able to play tomorrow? We're not thinking about tomorrow or our relation to it or what our actions today, what effect those will have on tomorrow. Just be there. Be there now, right? Yeah, again, he says, in selfing, life is happening to you. Self has become such a strong reference point that everything that is happening is now happening to you. Let's get that perspective up. Let's attend to the awareness. Let's just participate in this moment as awareness. And once you find that alternative, the selfing will go. You'll stop giving that devotional attention to selfing. Yeah, and then I just love how this this idea of being of claiming the thoughts coalesces with what we're talking about in the code. Paul says a thought comes into awareness. You hear the thought, but how you hear it is, I'm the thinker of it. The thought becomes observed as being mine, the act of identification, my thought. And we know that if we claim the thoughts, they just feed back into this overall code, and the thought's going to come back around again. Let's practice not identifying with the thoughts. Oh, there's angering happening here. There's anger happening here. Not, oh, I got angry. Oh, I got angry means I either have to justify it, or I have to continue to be angry. I have to untangle myself from being it. You see how that claiming of it says something about the self, it hardens the self, makes the self a reality, as opposed to, oh, there's anger happening. Claiming the thought creates the I. It makes the self a noun. Oh, I'm angry. Oh, suddenly there's an I here. A moment ago there was only anger. Now there's anger and an I. And there's an I that has to do something about the anger. It's the same thing with enlightenment, right? Oh, I have to be enlightened. Well, maybe there's enlightenment happening. Maybe there's awakening happening. Maybe if I look away from the eye, I just get to participate in the awakening. Yeah, so some notes I took when I was looking at in this interview with Paul. He says the key is to turn one's life over to something bigger, right? Some non-self thing, to awareness, to the truth. Not to take yourself so seriously. He says you have to see the self is not you. To win the battle with self. How about that? You have to see the self is not you to win the battle with self. Just quit the identification. It's just a collection of thoughts. Quit gathering the thoughts. Oh, those are thoughts. Okay. I'll choose another option. So when Regina said, well, I've got the date down here, March 18th. When Regina said forgiveness is letting go of the undue and placing attention with the true instead, she encouraged us to notice our thinking patterns and to ask ourselves, where shall I begin the process of forgiveness? Where shall I begin letting go of the untrue? What consistent thinking pattern do I have that keeps me from placing my attention with the true? Well, for the obvious answer is selfing. That's a great place for me to begin the process of forgiveness. So, what I'd leave you with is the invitation to look at yourself in practice. Catch yourself selfing and just go, oh, look, selfing is occurring. You don't even have to claim the selfing. There's no reason to. Who would claim it? Who is there to claim it? claiming it implies a self. So I would extend the invitation to you to notice the selfing that happens. Just notice it. And notice that that's one of two options, to self or not to self. and to choose the truth instead. what we do now is we play another song and take a moment to contemplate what's been said. If you want to make a donation, now's a good time. Barbara will post the link in the room. And then we'd love to hear from you after. So I'm going to let go of the mic so we can do that. Okay. Love you guys. Thanks so much.
To how you live and learn how to lie. Another face in this world that brings death to life. So don't believe in everything you see, because what you want might not be what you need. Oh, jump with me and fly. Cause you are the sun that leads me to the light. Hope is just a ray of what everyone should see. Alone in the street where you'll find me. Scared of what's behind you and scared of what's in front. Tell me a story, long and true, beyond what we say, beyond what we do. Peace and fun where we stand, just confused. So you are the moon that pulls me through the night. Scared of what's behind you, scared of what's in front.
Thank you, Lynn. Yeah, that was great. Philip Phillips. So now it's your turn. Anybody that wants to speak, we'd love to hear from you. You know, what are your thoughts about what was said this morning? What thoughts have come to you? Regina, please take the mic.
Well, Jacqueline, I just want to say that you got there. Obviously, you got out of the way or let the selfing stop, and the inspiration came through, and it was awesome. It reminded me of one of your earlier talks. I don't know, a year or so ago, you did a talk based on an Amodama teaching about self-positioning. And it's really that same thing, isn't it? Selfing, self-positioning. Looking at the world and experience. Oh, self-referencing. That's it. Thank you, Jacqueline. Self-referencing. Okay, so selfing and self-referencing, right? Looking at the world and determining what does that have to do with me? You know, everything's about me. And as you know, many of us are watching What the Bleep this week, and one of the things that really jumped out at me in What the Bleep that hadn't in my previous watchings of the film was this idea that the brain actually processes 4 billion bits of data per second. But that what we do is we very quickly, it has to be so instantaneous, we very quickly select from that 4 billion bits of data and we place our awareness on only 2,000 bits. And what they also said in What the Bleep is, the 2,000 bits that we select is the data that has to do with this body. So they were really talking about, in kind of a quantum scientific way, selfing. Right, selfing, what was the other word? Self-referencing. That's what we do. And what they also said in What's the Bleep, which I thought was quite interesting, was they said something about, what we need to do is we need to learn to turn, to kind of turn our awareness, turn our attention from that small 2,000 bits. And learn to look at more of the 4 billion bits that the brain is actually taking in and processing. It's all right here within. And that when we learn to look at more than just that 2,000 bits, he said, that's called realization. Imagine that. Imagine that realization, which is seeing beyond the personal point of view, is right here in your brain right now. right this second. And all we need to do is learn to let go of the being so interested in me that we're constantly selecting this small little bit of data. 2,000 is such a small number compared to 4 billion. Just let go of selecting that 2,000. And again, it's not learning to select the 4 billion because the 4 billion is already there. It's just learning to let go of selecting the 2,000. And when we learn to let go of selecting the 2,000, that's like turning our attention and the 4 billion becomes open and available for us to see. And that doesn't have any personal point of view in it. So it's all fitting together, Jacqueline. And I want to thank you for your teaching today. It was brilliant because you got out of the self-referencing. And then more of that data became available to you, right? Thank you.
Thank you, Regina. Yeah, that's real sweet. Thank you. Something you said reminded me of something that I wanted to mention, and that's we heard Tess Hughes say this, and I heard another woman, friend that someone I met recently was talking about her awakening, said the same thing. They both said that at some point they turned to look at the self, and the self was no longer there. So they attempted to do that self-referencing thing after practicing letting go of the self, and at some point they turned and the self was just just no longer they, and that was their description of their awakening, which is so cool, right? Because it is the absence of that personal self. So anyway, so thanks for letting me share that part. Lynn, please take the mic.
Well, yeah, this is actually the actual topic of everything, isn't it? Of course, discussions of these thoughts are not your thoughts. The thoughts that you're thinking are not your own. These are thoughts that just come through this, it's all a part of the script. and it's like as if you picked up a movie script and started reading it and thought that the script, the words in the script were your own thoughts. But they're not your own thoughts. They're part of the script. They're part of what makes everything move and work in this illusion. It makes the illusion seem real to me when these thoughts come to me and they come unbidden. I just was reading a study that says that seven seconds before your mind decides it's going to do something, your body is already doing it. You're already doing it before you recognize, oh, I'm going to do that. So, you know, they've been able to do, actually, and the Course says that as well. You're doing this and you don't even recognize that you're not the one who's originating the movement. And this is what I believe Paul Hederman is saying. This is what I believe Sailor Bob, who I've been listening to, that's what they're saying. This is all a movement. It's all a part of nature, if you want to call it something, or the illusion, or the script. And so, what are my real thoughts? And of course, in Miracles, Jesus is telling us over and over, these are not your real thoughts. Think, stop. Just stop, and you will be connected to the, whatever you want to call it, the Christ mind, the universal consciousness, whatever you want to call it. When I stop listening to the script and paying attention to it and start opening to that universal mind, that Christ mind, the thoughts that come then are the thoughts of God. Those are my real thoughts, and those are the things that guide me through the day. When I find myself becoming confused or feeling like I have to make a choice, feeling like I have to make a plan, feeling like I have to do something, anything, if there's any efforting involved at all, I know that I'm buying into the script and I'm going into the script and I'm trying to act and react according to the script instead of listening to the Christ mind informing me of the truth of what is. And then I know there's choice of any action. I'm going to act whatever I'm going to act. I'm going to do what I'm going to do. I'm going to say what I'm going to say. Those things are all a part of the script. But the reality of it is, that's not what's really happening at all. It's my experience in the world that's confusing me from actually seeing my true experience of myself as the Holy Son of God and of you as being the Christ as well. That when I move into that place, I see it from a standard of oneness and not from a standard of separateness. This is why I've thrown myself into heart, mind, and soul, the oneness movement, because that is what they're teaching me to do. And not just teaching me to do anything other than get out of the way and stop believing the thoughts in my mind. And, you know, when I get out of my own way and I stop believing the thoughts in my mind, then the voice that I hear is my true voice. And I recognize that I've heard that voice every moment of every day for my entire life. And I rejected it because it didn't make sense in accordance with my experience. And once I realized it was my experience in the illusion that was bringing me the comfort. And that is what Hal is mentioning. It brings me comfort because it's what I've been trained to believe. And it's what I've trained myself to believe. Even when it doesn't make sense, I still believe it and try to make sense of it in my own mind, which leads to no end of depression and confusion. It makes no sense. It will never make any sense. There's no point in trying to make sense out of it. Just recognize that it's not your real thoughts. Just recognize it's not, this is not the mind of God that is making this illusion up. And once I let that go, once I let go the believing in my own thoughts, and it took everything from A Course in Miracles, Byron Katie, NTI, so many things, to pointing at the same exact dang thing, and me saying, huh? What? Where is it? Well, I was doing it to myself. Anyway, thank you so much. Beautiful message. And listening to Paul Hederman. Paul has really helped me a lot. And, of course, Sailor Bob is the direct pointer. Anyway, thanks, Jacqueline. Thank you, everyone. I love you all.
Thank you, Lynn. I project the cartoon voice there at the end. Great. You made some excellent points. Absolutely. Yeah. Kathy, please take the mic.
I just wanted to thank you, Jacqueline, for going over this Paul Hederman stuff again. I have to say that I listened to the satsang, and I don't know, it just didn't resonate with me so much, but the reading definitely did, and your sharing on it definitely did. So I feel thankful that we looked at it again. And one of the things that I wanted to comment on quickly was from What the Bleep, and it was that the notion, I posted it on the board, one of the fellas said that the average human is distracted every 4 to 6 seconds in a minute's time. And I was thinking about that statement in relation to this selfing idea, and it seems to me, or it feels to me, that, you know, that very distraction always has to do with however, you know, what's going on or what's being said or what I'm seeing or some sort of external stimuli. You know, how does that affect me? How does that affect me? And so every 4 to 6 seconds, I am, you know, turning my attention back to that old habitual familiar pattern of how everything revolves around this me. And so it's like, wow, when I heard, you know, every 4 to 6 seconds, it really reminded me about the importance of vigilance. So, and how much help I need to stay on point. At any rate, I will give up the mic with that. Thanks.
Thank you, Kathy, for sharing that. And that's really the question. I mean, that's where we look from. How does this affect me? And I can tell you that since I've been looking at this stuff, I mean, it's absolutely, not that I need a change on the level of behavior, but I can see it, like, in my answering emails, like, in my work, instead of going, well, I already said that, or, you know, I mean, just even what my standard responses are, I can see how it's all about me and protecting the self that I think I am. Those responses now, I don't even need to use them. What would I use them for? Oh, to protect the self, the non-existent self? Yeah, that one. So, I mean, so it just... My willingness to no longer see from a personal self is making a radical difference in how I perceive. So, yeah. I think Paul probably does better just like he calls it riffing off of something. I think he does better when he just, his message is more clear when you have somebody peppering him with questions like I was doing. So if this resonates with you guys at all, I encourage you to listen to Paul's teachings that are widely available on his website, zenbitchslap.com, or available on YouTube. Absolutely. So I think we're at the end of our, I know we're at the end of our time for our service, so I'm going to let go of the mic and let Lynn play that our closing song, and then we'll have until 12 noon before our next program if you guys want to talk about this some more. So I'm going to let go of the mic and let Lynn play our song. Thanks, everybody. Thank you, Sherry, so much for reading. You did a fabulous job reading, and thanks, everybody, for being here. I'll let go of the mic.
I will bring a cup of water. Here's the best that I can offer. In the dusk of coming night, there is evidence of life. With the pattering of rain, let us bow as if in grace. Consider all the ways we heal and how a heart can break. Where its breath's empty, yes, abide with me, and we'll pass the evening gently, stay away with me, and we'll listen more intently to some words that stand me, true and ever changing in the quietness of now. Let us ponder the unknown, what is hidden and what's home, and finally learn to travel at the speed of our own souls. There is a living word, a spirit cutting through, always changing, always making. Something wordless and remaining, sure and ever changing in the quietness of now. Like a message in a bottle that some unseen hand has thrown. You don't have to be afraid. You don't have to walk alone. I don't know, but I suspect that it will be home. Oh, abide with me, where it's breathless and it's empty. Yes, abide with me, and we'll pass the evening gently, stay away with me, and we'll listen more intently to something wordless and remaining, sure and ever changing in the quietness of night.